Welcome to Castles and Cryptids, where the castles are haunted and the cryptids are cryptic as fuck. I'm Alana, and this is my lovely co-host, Kelsey.
Yay! Hello.
And we are keeping it together this week.
Yeah. Even though I literally had 3 days off this week, I feel like I had none off it because every day I've been at work has felt like a week.
Right? Even shortened weeks. Like, it was a holiday week where you had the month, like the Monday was a statutory holiday. Everyone's like, feels like a crazy week. I'm like, it feels like a crazy week. My supervisor was up till 3 a.m. Thursday night because that was the day we beat the Flames, the Calgary Flames, to move on to the next round of the playoffs, which we haven't done since 2006. So that's pretty exciting.
Okay.
Well,
I haven't been keeping up.
Oh, there's Oilers flags on everyone's cars, I'm telling you. It's good because then we don't have to be so ironically called the City of Champions if we actually, win another Champions. That was because we had Gretzky, so it's hard to live up to that. But Connor McDavid is like doing his best to beat a lot of Gretzky's records and stuff. Like, he's really, really good. So yeah, it's been cool.
Fun.
But I don't know, it's just the whole week got away from me, so it's hard because I couldn't do work, was busy, and then I was like, I don't have time to do our notes. We recorded our Patreon and then put that out, so but then we had to do this one.
It's okay, we might, if we end up having to split this one, I don't know, we'll see. Mine's gonna be on the shorter side. It might end up working out to still being about 2 hours, so we might be okay. But
I have written quite a few notes, not finished yet, but I also typed up about 6 pages, so it's kind of nearer to my usual where I'll cut it, because I don't know, started looking for little things and then was like, oh yeah, there is this big thing I could cover that, and then it's like, oh wait, no, this is something that needs like a whole episode or two parts or something.
But
I made a huge mistake, as Job would say, from Arrested Development. But that's okay. I'll go last then, because then it'll go right into the part two.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah. Well, welcome. It's June.
Yeah. Oh my god. I didn't even realize. Yeah, it's summer.
We made it. Oh, let me see if I have a interesting fact or anything. Hang on.
I just know that the forecast for next week, or will have already happened by the time this airs, it's supposed to be beautiful, and I'm so excited.
Right. Well, yeah, this airs next week. So that's good to know. It'll be nice out here. That's funny. Okay, you were talking about Gordo being a dick before we started. Just to call you out. No, call Gordo out. So here's a fact about a cat. In 1997, an orange cat named Stubbs became honorary mayor of the Alaskan town of Talkeetna. With a population of 772 in 2000, it would not have taken too many votes to earn the position. And the small town did not actually have a real human mayor anyway. But Stubbs proved adept at the role, gaining fans from around the world and serving in the position for years, greeting tourists and becoming a beloved symbol of the town until his death in 2017.
I like those. There's also cats that have been named like train station conductors and stuff like that. Oh, nice. They're so cute. They've got cute little outfits.
Right. And then they try and use them as spies during the war and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, leave the cute cats alone.
Yeah. There was one I think I heard about that was like on a bunch of ships that sinked, the bunch of ships that sunk in the war. I mean, he was like an unsinkable cat.
Excuse me. Where have I heard that before too?
I literally listened to an episode of Historical AF all about cats. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I've heard of that one too. I just don't know where I would have.
Crazy ship stories. Crazy war stories.
Something weird. Bye, Gordo.
I've derailed us right off the hop. So that was your week.
Crazy. I'm glad it's over. Mm. But next week is just as crazy. So, well, I assume.
Yeah, probably.
If it holds. Yeah. This working full-time thing is garbage.
Right? I want to be working full-time, but for myself. I could work like an easy 6 hours in the podcast every day. Or we would do something like we would work Monday to Thursday, because we don't believe in 5-day work weeks.
I don't. I mean, they're
stupid.
Yeah.
Anything that was like invented by the rich people, and they're like, oh yeah. Or like daylight saving times when they invented during war, and they're like, this will be temporary. And then here we are, like 100 years later, still doing it.
Yeah, that's also stupid.
It's so dumb. You can probably hear the birds outside the window today. The birds are chirping. The apple tree blossoms are blossoming.
All I can hear is Gordo playing with his bottle cap in the hallway.
At least he's not eating in his dish. Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, that's in the kitchen now. It's not in this room.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's nice.
But his collar will still hit the table if he's laying on the desk here beside me, which he often does. His collar will hit it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Funny.
Well, we're talking about some Canadian shit this week. I haven't done that in a while.
We finally got to urban legends that are sort of urban legends. We're just like lore.
We're not a big lore country. We don't have like, I mean, it's not that we don't have a long history. My mom gave me a Canadian ghost stories book, and it's like, oh yeah, we have ghost stories and stuff going back a few centuries, but like we're a melting pot of different cultures, so like they just bring their own lore and stuff, I think. And so then a lot of it was cryptids.
Yeah, and a lot of it we've already talked about before, so it was kind of a bit of a challenge, but we each picked our home province, or at least area that we were born in,
that's true.
Which was fun.
Yeah, I like doing that stuff. Maritimes, for me, that's cool, because you can definitely get like some
good, you have a lot
lore on the sea. I actually had a little bit on like a ghost ship that I might have to move to a Patreon maybe when we're doing our mini-sode recording, because I was like, this other thing is too long.
An extension, a bonus episode.
But yeah, it's like when you think of urban legends, like the that's obviously the more modern, not like you don't think of like old folklore when you say urban legends. You think more of like razors in the Halloween candy and like just stuff I feel like that's come up in the last century or so, you know?
Yeah.
So I think when you put the urban in front of it, it kind of modernizes it. So, but there's not a lot of those in Canada. So,
no, there really isn't. So I'm like, I went old, semi-old. I mean, I did what I could.
I would say we would just hear all the American ones anyway. You would hear all that stuff that's comes from the TV and movies.
Yeah, probably more so than anybody hears anything coming out of Canada. They know all the ones in the US.
If you watch Schitt's Creek or Letterkenny, you like a Canadian TV show, though.
Yeah. Oh, we like. I still have to finish watching Letterkenny, and then I'm not.
Oh, okay. The newest season.
Oh, I'm like 3 seasons behind, I think.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
I can't even remember where I am. I'd have to figure it out.
Figure it out, bud. Give your balls a tug, eh?
I want to watch Shorzy so much.
Yes, we've seen the first few episodes.
Everybody on Sonic was talking about how so many people didn't realize that the same guy.
Yeah, they did a good job. He doesn't look like Wayne.
A lot of people didn't realize he was played by the same person, like, the entire series. And it's like, yeah, that's him. Yeah. That's why they never showed his face before. I thought it would be funny if in his own show they also never showed his face. I thought that would have been funny, too.
They've done that in a few shows where they do a character where they, like George's boss on Seinfeld, they don't show Steinbrenner's face, but I think that's because he was like a real person and they didn't have the real guy.
It's just, what's his face, his voice?
Oh, Larry.
Yeah, Larry David.
David, thank you. I'm like, duh.
Anyway.
I was going to say something.
Yes. So I think I'm kicking us off. Because we're talking about part 2s, but my part, I wish I could have found more than I did. But Alberta's hard. And
did you specifically look for something in Alberta?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I wanted to do something from like province I was born in.
Yeah, I feel like I had that same thought where I was like, what's from my neck of the woods?
Yeah, the only problem was is almost everything in Alberta we had already talked about. So it left like 2 options out of like everything.
I don't remember what we would have talked about, but I do remember talking about like at least some northern cryptids, so maybe.
Yeah, there was a lot of northern cryptids. There was like Sasquatch, obviously, is like one of the biggest things that comes up.
That's true.
But
yeah,
even when you look up Canadian urban legends, there's like everything that we've already talked about is listed.
We're fine with our choice.
I chose to go with something that we hadn't talked about. I mean, obviously, I chose to go with the hoodoos. Primarily located kind of in southern Alberta, in like in and around Drumheller, I guess.
The hoodoos. I don't think I'd ever heard that word before I moved here.
Yeah, it's not like just a North American word, and stuff. We'll get into it because the word itself has kind of different things about how it maybe started, but
okay.
Nice. I don't know how old I would have been, maybe what, around 10 or so. We went to Drumheller and I think we only ever went there once, and I have pictures. This is like before they ever did a thing about like don't touch the hoodoos, don't do this, but I'm pretty sure I have pictures of me like I'm like standing right beside them because it was, I don't know, before pre-2010, so they didn't have the same kind of
things. I don't know anything
things.
About that. Okay.
Yeah. I did put a couple pictures on the drive. They're kind of cool. It's hoodoos and then some different ones from different places around the world we'll talk about. So, as I said, they're called like the Badlands of southern Alberta. That's kind of the Drumheller area. It's called the Badlands.
That's so cool. I think Badlands is a cool name.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I picture like kind of deserty.
Yes.
Yeah.
So most of the ones in Drumheller are like 5 to 7 meters tall, which is about 15 to 20 feet. But in other parts of the world, they can be up to like 150 feet tall.
150 feet tall. Holy.
Yeah. So what happens is it's kind of like a, it's basically like rock. So if you had like a rock, like wall, and then wind kind of like eroded it into like separate pillars, and then the pillars slowly just kind of erode down. So that's how they can get like super tall.
They're just sticking up out of the ground like giant phallic symbols.
I mean, they'd be pretty flat on top, but
yeah.
Okay. Around the world, they do have a few different names. Places call them tent rocks. They're also called fairy chimneys and earth pyramids.
Earth pyramids?
Yeah, earth pyramids kind of doesn't make sense to me, but fairy chimney is kind of cute.
Yeah, I like that one. Fairy chimney. And it seems more accurate because it would look more like a chimney.
Yeah, than a it does look pyramid. Very much like a chimney.
Yeah, they don't have wide bases.
No.
They look, or like, what's like the Washington Monument, or what do they call those things? Like an obelisk? Like, more similar to that kind of shape. It's just a long, tall.
Yeah, like that. And kind of like an hourglass, like it's wider at the top and the bottom, and then it's narrower in the middle kind of thing.
It's interesting, the freaking shapes that are made from erosion.
Yeah. It's
like sea glass and stuff like that that gets all rubbed away.
Oh, I love that. So crazy. So the word hoodoo itself, its origin is debated, but it's kind of agreed there's two different ways it kind of came about. However, the word itself is really only a few hundred years old.
Oh.
Yeah. So one place the word hoodoo might have originated from is hoodoo spirituality, which I had never heard of. And
I've heard of voodoo.
Yeah.
And that I know comes from like I think African sort of faith or something.
Yeah, that is
Haitian.
There's like, yeah, there's a specific areas in Africa. This is hoodoo spirituality, I believe, also originates from Africa. And this was, oh no, that's like a separate language. I don't know how hoodoo spirituality came about. But this is the certain belief that naturally occurring formations are said to possess certain powers. So that's kind of cool. Yeah. You like that kind of stuff.
Yes. And they either build sites on the ley lines sometimes.
Or that's what I thought of too, the ley lines.
There's some correlation between the powers of the earth, like in the magnetism and all that fun stuff.
So by the late 19th century, the hoodoo spirituality had basically become associated with bad luck.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oops.
And then another origin for the word hoodoo may come from West Africa. I looked up the pronunciation. I can't remember.
Oh.
In the Hausa, I believe it was, the Hausa language. Okay. In West Africa, hoodoo means to arouse resentment and practice retribution, which, based on different kind of legends around the hoodoo, I'd say that might be more telling of the word itself, if that's what it's translated to, because it is kind of a punishment. We'll get to it.
Neat. I like word origins.
Etymology.
I'll never remember.
Yeah. I think we had the problem with this, and I kept looking up the origin of word crimes. Yeah, that one.
Because we did the forensic.
Yeah, entomology.
Entomology. Crimes, right. Jesus. Okay.
Terrible.
There's gotta be a way, like a mnemonic for that, like entomology. Okay, so it's the one with the N. So like something about N and bugs that we can correlate.
Yeah, I am not good with any of those kind of like memory learning things. They never worked for me. I can't do it.
Yeah, it can be so hard.
According to geologists, hoodoos form when sandstone erodes underneath a flat stone top or a cap.
Okay.
And as you kind of talked about, they're typically found in dry or desert-like conditions. So that's why we have them in the Badlands around Drumheller. And cool. The erosion that occurs underneath the cap forms sort of a pillar or a column that basically becomes skinnier each year. They said the hoodoos in, I think it was Drumheller, erode at approximately 1 centimeter a year. So I don't know that's from like in total, or if that would be like per side, or if it's like half a centimeter each side.
Right, like it's the whole circumference goes down a centimeter.
So hoodoos can erode faster, obviously due to rain, wind, as well as different freeze thaw cycles. So they talked about on the website about like water getting in, because it's sand, it can absorb a certain amount of water, and then if it gets cold overnight like it can in the desert, then it freezes, and then it the water expands and it forms cracks, and then it can cause these chunks to break off.
Right.
Yeah. So hoodoos.
Sorry.
Pardon?
I was like, my throat made a little gurgle noise. I was like, whoa.
Hoodoos can take millions of years to form, and they're very fragile. If the cap on top is dislodged or falls, apparently the pillar or column underneath will deteriorate very quickly. So what actually keeps it around for so long that they like do stay up is the cap themselves, which is kind of interesting.
Okay, but it's not capstone where like standing stone circles, you get say two stones standing upright and then a capstone like a roof between over them.
This is like their own kind of like
they're just talking about the top almost. Of it.
Yeah basically. So eventually all hoodoos are said to eventually erode enough that the cap will fall and then the hoodoo will disappear forever. So eventually all of them will be gone. I guess it almost the same as fast probably as new ones are formed. Don't think they'll all ever fully go away.
Like stalagmites?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
So as I said, they're not unique to Alberta, Canada, and many can actually be found on the Colorado Plateau in Bryce Canyon National Park, which has the best coloring ever. It reminds me so much of Arizona.
Yeah, it does look like Arizona. Almost that red rock.
Red.
Utah.
Just so bright. Nevada. Looks like everything. Every picture looks like it took at a sunrise or sunset. It's nice. And Goblin Valley State Park. There's San Rafael Swell in the USA, as well as other places around the world.
Man, they really are big when you see a person standing next to them.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. Yeah. The hoodoos in France can be found in, and pardon my French pronunciations.
Usually when people say pardon my French, they're about to swear.
I wish I was about to swear. No, I'm about to attempt to speak French instead. The Alpes de Haute, or Hoot, I'm not sure, province.
Oh.
And
I would have to see the spelling, probably.
Yeah, sure. They're called the Demoiselle Coffee de Pontus.
Ooh.
Which translates, this is the cutest name other than fairy chimneys. In France, the Demoiselle Coffee de Pontus translates to ladies with hairdos. So cute.
Okay, I was gonna say it sounds like Mademoiselle. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's cute, ladies with hairdos.
Yeah, ladies with hairdos. Okay. And
most ladies then.
Yeah, most ladies have hairdos when they have hair. In France, they also call them the Chimney de Fay.
Oh, that's fairy chimney.
Yeah, that's the fairy chimneys.
Oh, okay.
So they have my two favorite names for them because they have fairy chimneys and ladies with hairdos.
Ah, the French. And their swearing really is great. It's all religious shit, at least in French Canadian swearing is all like tabernac. And it's like, what does that mean? It's like, it means like tabernacle. Or like, you know, it's all like churches and stuff. So funny.
And the I might have the pictures out of order. I'll do that one after, just because it's the best one. So in Serbia, they have approximately 200 formations that they call earth pyramids or towers by the locals.
Oh, yeah.
And most of them, I believe, are in a site called Devil's Town.
Devil's Town.
Yeah. I have a picture of it. It looks kind of cool. And they've been protected by the state since back to 1959. And this was going to be part of the new Seven Wonders of Nature campaign. So I think they were trying to do part like maybe the Seven Wonders of the World. This was the Seven Wonders of Nature campaign.
Seven Wonders of Nature. Okay, okay. Everybody wants a seven wonder.
That one's in Serbia.
Damn it. sorry. Okay.
Yeah, this one.
Devil's Town. Okay, I see it now. Sorry.
Yeah, they look not the most hoodoo-ish. I mean, I'd say the ones in Drumheller are pretty, cool.
Yeah, these ones almost do look more like rough chimneys because they don't look like as smoothly eroded away and like the ripply effect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Cool. I'll have to ask Pat if he's seen some. I think he's been to Serbia when he was in the army.
Oh, cool.
Did a tour over in that region.
Yeah, maybe
there was lots of fighting there. But
I'd imagine.
Sorry.
It might be like the composition of them or like what they're made out of and stuff, about like what the outside texture is like more. The hoodoo stones on the northern coast of Taiwan are unusual for their coastal setting. The stones actually formed as the seabed rose rapidly out of the ocean during the Miocene period. So freaking millions of years ago.
Right.
Which is kind of cool because that was the seabed rising out of the ground.
Yeah, thrusting upwards.
Yeah. So the one that's the picture of the little houses inside the hoodoos that you saw, this is Cappadocia or Cappadocia. That's in Turkey.
I've heard of it. Yes.
Yeah, it's so cute.
Cappadocia. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like mushroom in Turkey, houses.
Yeah. They look like little mushroom houses. Oh, they're adorable. People have carved the formations or hoodoos out in order to create houses. And these houses were actually depicted on the back of a Turkish banknote. There should be a picture of that too. It's kind of cool.
They're just we got them. Let's put them on our money.
Yeah.
Nice.
And the people of Cappadocia have also used the hoodoo formations to carve out their monasteries. They've carved out castles and churches, as well as entire cities, which is what I tried to save the pictures of, is like the towns and cities that they've done. Very cool.
Man, that's a different kind of castle than we usually talk about too.
Yeah. It's so cool. I definitely would want to visit that. It reminds me.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about it before on here. My dad and I used to watch, which was like underground cities or hidden cities or something, that was basically about like cities that were, so they'd be like, yeah, underneath like Toronto is like this crazy underground like tunnel system that used to operate as this, or in some cities like there actually is like a like super old city underneath it that like the new developers just built on top of.
I think like Seattle, and then like you get places with catacombs like Paris. Oh man. Yeah. And you just did something underground on our latest Patreon. I think we're both a little interested with that underground.
Shit. It's very cool.
I don't know if I'd want to live in one of these. Like, it probably would be drafty, but
I feel like, where's the doors? I mean, I could live anywhere if I had a strong enough Wi-Fi signal. Like, it's all I need in life.
Yeah, a little bit too open plan. I'm a mall person.
Where do I hang up my clothes? I need to see the closets first.
Everything would be cozy, I'm guessing.
Yeah,
that's what you would describe it as in realtor language. It's cozy. You can't stand up without hitting your head.
It's cozy. So the hoodoos in Drumheller stand about 20 feet tall, and they're actually now protected by fencing, as people attempting to climb and take pictures with them has caused the erosion to accelerate. Obviously it's damaged them. And signs are now posted to designate where you should stand and take pictures, and kind of the walking trails. And it's important not to leave the trails or touch the hoodoos, as they may fall on you. They can't confirm like how stable any of them are. So if you're like touching it and accidentally knock the cap off, the cap is like a huge, huge stone, and it could fall on you and kill you. So,
oh God, it's like a big tree that's been like slowly whittled away at its trunk until you're just like, it's going to be like timber if you like blow on it.
So people, if they don't follow these signs, can face fines up to $50,000 or face even a year in jail.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What are you in for? Touch the hoodoo.
Touch the hoodoo. Hoodoo crimes. They probably are just fining people. All I found is people getting fined. I do have a couple that was mentioned in one article. As in 2011, a Calgary man carved his name, his daughter's name, and the word Columbia into one of the hoodoos. He was fined only $1,000 because he ended up telling them he didn't speak English. And I guess his lawyers were basically like, then he couldn't read the posted signs saying not to touch the hoodoos. And not to carve your family's names into them and shit, I guess.
How convenient, sir.
Yeah. I must sue you because my hot coffee is hot and it burned me. Like,
oh.
Those people.
Well, that particular case is, that's grown to almost an urban legend status since you bring it up. Because the case that everyone, like, that sounds like a so frivolous, like someone sued McDonald's. It was like, well, just for her hospital bill was money at first and stuff like that, right? Because it was like so hot that like she got like third degree burns like all over her like inner thighs, and like parts of her flesh like fused together, and she was like this old lady. I was listening to an episode of You're Wrong About on it, which is a podcast that my sister turned me on to. That's, it takes things that we commonly like think about, and then it's like, but did you know that this? And you're like, Well, no, actually. I hadn't heard that side of it. Yeah, it's crazy. Anyway, funny you should mention
and
that.
And in 2016, some vandals ended up leaving, I think it was a colored smoke, like, canister. I follow a guy that does, like, smoke, like, photography kind of stuff.
Oh, that'd be cool. My first thought went to someone doing, like, a gender reveal thing where they, like, burst colored smoke, like, either pink or blue.
I feel like it's probably the same kind of canister, because this ended up spraying blue paint onto one of the hoodoos. So obviously they weren't happy about that. Maybe they were doing a gender reveal and it was a boy.
Right. And then people end up like setting up forest fire. They're like, oops, we just did it with a pyrotechnics in the middle of the woods. We didn't think anything would happen.
Right?
You're like, no.
Yeah. So the hoodoos and Drumheller are also specials because the stone caps contain nearly 40% calcite cement, which I'm not a geologist, but apparently this makes them slower to erode than a lot of other hoodoos in the world.
No kidding. So it's called Drumheller. Cement or something cement.
Yeah, like, calcite cement.
That sounds pretty fucking hard.
Yeah. And the stripes, which I like, because I feel like the ones in Drumheller are definitely more visible. You can see striping in it.
Yeah.
I don't think the other ones really vary in color from what I saw. And the stripes and the different colors on these hoodoos show all the different stages of the Earth's formation. And the striped stone layers appear this way in different colors because of the mineral deposits differing in each layer, which I really like about the ones in Drumheller.
Yeah,
it's very like a cross visibly section. See the stripes.
Yeah. Like when you see someone cut down a tree and there's cross sections, or it's like you just where you see they're like trying to explain how the layers of the earth look, and but you can't see it, and then you just see a pictograph and it's like, well, this layer is sediment and this layer is gold.
Yeah
it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's cool to be able to see it.
Nature and doesn't usually make perfectly straight lines, and I'm sure they're not perfectly straight, but
but it's cool because when you see all the hoodoos side by side, the lines like continue from one to the other, like the same colors. It's the same striping.
One of the first ones you put up of Drumheller, I can see that in that one, and also I do see the cap presented pretty clearly in that one. It almost looks like I'm looking at a picture of like a lighthouse or something at first glance. It's like,
oh yeah,
picture that's the fair. Bottoms being like rocks, and then like just have these couple of cylinder things coming out the top, and then they have a top part, and that's interesting. That's just my maritime eyes.
So the hoodoos in Drumheller are composed of clay and sand that was deposited between 70 and 75 million years ago during the Cretaceous period. We're so old.
Well, we do have found a lot of fucking dinosaurs in Alberta. So
I didn't want to get into it, but Albertosaurus, go us.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good name. That's almost, there's one too that's just Apatosaurus, and I like that one.
That's cute.
Yeah. It's like a long neck.
So my last bit is just obviously like the urban legend or like the lore, I guess, around hoodoos. I couldn't find very much on it. That's why it's so much geology and trips around the world, but
that's okay. Geology rocks.
Yeah.
I'm Ross Geller.
According, obviously this is like a lot of stuff for like indigenous people in like North America. A lot of these kind of lore and different beliefs come from. So according to the Blackfoot and Cree people in Alberta, hoodoos are petrified giants who come alive at night in order to protect the land.
What?
Yeah.
That's not what I was expecting.
Right? I wasn't either. They protect the land apparently by, when they come alive, they throw stones at intruders and vandals, I guess.
They pop a cap in your ass. Capstone.
Right? Just take one off the hoodoo like a frisbee.
Or like, you know, those Inukshuks, the rocks that are stacked up to look like people. I just picture one of those coming to life and like throwing off a piece of it.
And it just coming back like a boomerang.
Yeah.
So according to I think this is the same. Oh, this is a different Blackfoot legend. And it refers to the Mahtopics, as people. It's kind of what they call hoodoos, I guess. And in ancient times, the Blackfoot people struggled with uncertainty and anger. And the hoodoos were seen as those who chose to move away from the teachings of the creator, and they were turned into the Mahtopics or the hoodoos and never heard from again.
Wow.
Each one of these I was looking up like Blackfoot, like hoodoos, like lore, everything. Yeah. I couldn't find any of the actual stories other than one I found on one of the websites.
That's cool though. That's a few different theories or like, yeah, stories.
And then this comes back to the one like translation of hoodoo. And in a legend of the Paiute Indians of Bryce Canyon National Park, so they have hoodoos there. These people lived in the area for hundreds of years before the European Americans arrived. And they believed that hoodoos were ancient people who were turned into stone as punishment for their bad deeds.
They were like Medusa. So the one like
translation said retribution.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's kind of a trend. You get the Greek mythology with Medusa, and then in the Bible, God turns someone into a pillar of salt. I don't know.
But it is agreed. So most Native American and indigenous legends in North America agree that hoodoos are some sort of result of a transformation of an animal or a person into the stone pillar. And some legends also say that this could have been the result of even just an animal dying and becoming part of the land. So it's like, I guess, a burial marker, if you look at it that way.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that a little better. Seems a little more peaceful than someone just living and then like turning to stone. It's almost like the ones in the Game of Thrones, they were turning to stone bit by bit, like just up their arms.
Oh yeah,
the gray men or whatever.
So this I got from frazzledad.com, and this was a thing. It was called Everything You Wanted to Know About Hoodoos on frazzledad.com. Thanks.
Who knew? Hoodoos.
Yeah.
So they should have called it.
And so this is directly off the website because this was the only actual story I could get. I assume this is kind of their writing up about it. It said this is a legend about a small group of hoodoos in British Columbia.
Oh.
And it's in the Dead Man Valley near Savannah, and they're called the Dead Man Hoodoos.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Creepy.
So centuries ago, when the Dead Man Creek served as a passageway through the valley, the residents of the valley were vulnerable to invading warriors from the north. Centuries ago, when the Dead Man Creek served as a passageway through the valley, the residents of the valley were vulnerable to invading warriors from the north. Elders gathered to plan a strategy.
Okay, so do you have any idea? We're recording now, okay. Do you have any idea what I'm covering yet?
Other than you talked about the ghost ship for a second, and I think I ran across that when I was just looking up Canadian urban legends.
I said I had to cut that though.
Yeah, everything else I can that I ran across that I can remember, we already talked about. So I'm gonna say no. I have no idea what you're gonna talk about.
It's so funny. I hadn't thought to cover it, and then I'm going through lists, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I think that might count as a legend. It's on a list here. It makes sense. It's a curse. A curse of an island.
Oh my god. Yes, I knew it. I knew at some point you were gonna... Let me guess. The island has a type of wood in the name. I thought of that when I was like looking up lists too. It was like Oak Island, and then I was like, oh, Alana's gonna talk about that, and then I totally forgot.
She watches the show.
Hey, I've caught a few episodes with my dad. I know they've actually found shit, but
it's been really exciting the last few years. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not very informed about it. But
well, it goes back a long time, so it's easy not to be. There was people I hadn't heard about, and but like watching a show that's been on for close to 10 years or something.
Yeah, my dad's been watching it probably since it started.
Yeah, yeah. And we all tease. I remember the text my mom sends me one day after like going out for a walk in the woods or something and finding a couple neat like twigs and things like that. And then she goes, look, I found everything they found on Oak Island in the last... It just sent me this picture, like these random little wood trinkets, and I was like, "Aha!"
Savage. It is.
She's funny. Love you, mom. She'll catch up to this one eventually. Yeah, sometimes people can be. I've heard it covered on a few different podcasts, and I know a lot of people don't watch the show and stuff, and so they can be a little bit like, "Well, they haven't found a damn thing," and. They just spend all their money, and it's like, yeah, that's not true. There's a big part of the curse is you could just lose all your money and become obsessed with this and just kind of go crazy. But yeah, it's I do find it very, very interesting. And the first part is going to be the history of the discovery and the searching, and then I'll have to do more of the theories and stuff like that kind of in the second part.
Okay. I'm excited. I don't know much about Oak Island, but I do know like a few of the things that they've found there, so
okay,
cool. Good. To know more.
Yeah, pretty covered only on a few things, so it's exciting. And it definitely interests me, so
yeah, it's cool. Maybe. Who doesn't want treasure,
right? It's in Nova Scotia. I was born in Halifax, Nova Scotia. We moved when I was pretty little, like 3 or 4, something like that, just back to New Brunswick where my mom grew up. And so then that's where I grew up. But then after my parents divorced, my dad still lived in Halifax and stuff and still lives in that area, so it's actually really not far from Halifax. And
yeah,
it goes back to 1795, which is why my notes took forever. Which is it's over 200 years old, which is awesome,
which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and we should do, I don't know if we're doing a Haunted Canada one soon or if I just maybe suggested it, but there's definitely some old shit and weird shit that's gone down in Nova Scotia.
Yeah, everything on like the East Coast is good. The West Coast here is not that old. So in the grand scheme of things, it's not as old.
That's true. All right. So the original discovery starts with the 16-year-old Daniel McGinnis, who was the original searcher. All right, we got this. Okay, so 16-year-old Daniel McGinnis. He was from Chester, Nova Scotia, and he just headed over to Oak Island for various reported reasons, because as it starts out, it's in the late 1700s, and there wasn't a lot reported on it in the beginning until later. So it's just kind of like the stories people remember. So some of this stuff is not as well documented, but he either went to hunt or to like look for a place to farm, maybe on the island, which was basically uninhabited at the time. But okay. Either way, he went there. So we know that happened. That's the important part. And he first rode over by himself one day. I had a cough. The island's not far off the shore of Nova Scotia's Mahone Bay area. So he could just take a little boat over, whatever. And nowadays there's like a road on a causeway connecting it to the mainland, but at the time there wasn't. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's much like, as I had in my notes, like how there's a Confederation Bridge now that exists between New Brunswick, the shore, and Prince Edward Island.
Yeah.
Which I would give a shout out to my dad if I thought he would listen, but he did work on it because he's a civil engineer. So, and that happened in my lifetime. Like that's like the longest bridge over some sort of ice infested waters, or it's got one of those long Guinness World titles.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Those long bridges are creepy.
Right? I think it's at least kilometer or two, I don't remember, but yeah, so you don't always have to take the ferry like when I was a kid. Okay, but anyway, this one at the time there was no bridge or anything, so Daniel McGinnis heads over to Oak Island, sees a odd depression in the ground, just something that wasn't really a normal hole. Some sources say that there was like a fishing tackle kind of stuck in the tree above the odd depression too, but I'm not sure about that. Not all the sources say it. So
okay,
it's interesting though. I've seen pieces of fishing tackle stuck in a tree when we went to visit when we went to visit my mom in 2020. We went to a lake in New Brunswick, and there was an overhanging tree and someone's like fishing line, and
when they go back to it, like cast it, it gets stuck.
Probably. Like I tried to climb out onto the branch overhanging the water, but I just looked like a fat panther. Anyway. Okay, so he decided to come back the next day with his two buddies, Anthony Vaughn and John Smith. Literally John Smith. But they set to digging, and I said that maybe they thought there was a body there. I don't know why they set to digging in this depression exactly, but they thought it was weird. So, and there was sort of some lore stories about the island already at this point. So maybe that influenced them. But whether or not that's true, at exactly 3 meters or 10 feet down for Americans, they found an oak log platform perfectly placed there, like just laid down like a floor, but it wasn't a floor.
Okay.
It's in the ground. And another 3 meters down, there's another platform, then another, and they can see pickaxe marks in the flinty clay walls, quote unquote. So you could tell people had been there, and obviously these were there for some purpose or another.
It's yeah.
And so then that's hard for them to be digging this far down, but they were intrigued, so they sought out help with this endeavor, but they were met with some reluctance from the local people. Most people believe that the island was haunted, actually. Sorry. They thought it was haunted, quote, by the ghosts of two fishermen who vanished there in 1720 while investigating strange lights. So that's a piece that they don't talk about that a lot on like the show and stuff. They just talk about the first person to discover it, Daniel McGinnis.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I guess people were scared to go there, so no one else would come help them, and they had to give up for a little bit. And then McGinnis and Smith moved to Oak Island. They were not about to give up for good. And so they got some help from a man named Simeon Lynds. It's like L-Y-N-D-S. That's why I struggled with that one.
Yeah, Lynds.
Lynds? That's hard to say. Damn it.
Yeah.
Okay. He joined them in 1803, and he had money, so cha-ching.
Perfect.
That's gonna help, yeah. They kept going further down with the aid of this man and his moolah, and they found more odd things along the way, like coconut fibers, charcoal, and ship's putty. So definitely odd for this region and for where they are.
Coconut fibers in the 1800s is very strange to be on an island in Canada.
Yeah, way up here. It's like,
don't see many coconut trees.
No. No, you don't. The Canadian coconut is not something you've heard of.
Yeah.
Okay. At 90 feet, or about 27 meters, they found a large slab, so stone, about 2 to 3 feet in length, appearing to be made of granite and engraved with two lines of symbols or glyphs. So there weren't letters, but some sort of code or something.
Yeah.
So there's a folder on the drive now with some pictures, mm-hmm. and there's a picture of the 90-foot stone, and it's cryptic, right? It's a code. We don't know what it means. There's a few people that think they've found some translations, of course, but it was huge. I don't know. And a quote, the mysterious inscription continues to engage researchers and cryptologists. The most famous and generally accepted translation is that offered by Reverend A.T. Kempton in 1949, which is 40 feet below, 2 million pounds are buried. That's what he thinks it says, and a lot of people really liked that.
Yeah. Here lie money.
Yes, but I guess it fit with the cipher that person was using, so who am I to know? I've never been good at those things. My mom always could do those when, you know, you give her a newspaper and they had these cryptograms in them, and then you had to just like literally take those bunch of letters and try to figure out what letters they were correlating to, and like a code. I'm like, I'm not good at that.
Yeah, it's all about like, I guess, patterns. Understanding. Yeah. So like if one symbol is by itself, if a symbol is supposed to be a letter, then you literally just write down every letter of the alphabet that would make sense in a sentence for it to be by itself. So like you could have the letter I and like A.
Yeah, those and stuff, could only work.
But like, yeah, there's not much you wouldn't have many others that would ever appear just as like a soul character by themselves, and then you like build off of that based on like the frequency of the letters being used in like sentences or words.
I mean, like, I get the concept, but I'm like, I would not be one of those people they'd be calling during war times to like help them out with it.
No.
My mom, maybe. So this simian, okay, what did I say here? Sorry. Oh yeah, which did you find the pictures too?
Yeah,
there's one that should say 90-foot stone. They're not really in any order, so it doesn't really matter. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at the symbols. I'm like, it's crazy.
It's, yeah. I mean, it's not like hieroglyphics. It's just more like runes or something. It's hard to tell just looking at them.
Yeah, it does look like runes. That's what I thought. It's a lot of like squares, triangles, crosses, and dots.
Yeah, geometrical almost. Okay. So all this stuff they find, and then at 28 meters or almost 92 feet, a crowbar was driven down until it hit something very hard with the thunk, unlike anything rock makes. Apparently, they were like, this is something.
Oh, is it something hollow?
Or I think they thought a different material other than stone.
Maybe
they had. Yeah. But different than anything they had found so far, yeah. So Simeon Lyons thought, a chest, but they had to retire for the evening. I mean, this stuff must take all day. I see them go at it on the show.
Yeah. And,
you know, that's with today's technology. But the very next day, they had to retire for the evening. And the very next day, the hole is filled almost entirely back up. It was back up to 18 meters or 59 feet high of water in the pit they had dug.
Oh, geez.
So talk about bad luck on this place. It's not even, that's not even the word for it. It's only the beginning of
what everybody say, if I think I hit a buried treasure chest, I'm not retiring for the night.
Let's just push on for another hour. I don't know if they had light. They couldn't.
It's like, maybe.
I don't know. It's very frustrating.
Working shifts. I don't know. Figure it out.
It sounds like they're trying so hard, though, because then they tried to empty it with weeks of bailing out the water. So that did nothing. The water line remained at the same level. And Lyons thought it must be connected to an underground spring or something. So then they tried a different tactic. The next year, they sent miners, not children, but the miners, the 49ers.
I didn't even think that they sent children. Oh. But thank you for clarifying.
Sometimes when you're talking about true crime, that's when more often you're likely to think minors under 18.
Probably, yeah.
So they sent some miners to dig 33 meters down about 108 feet just off to the side of the original hole. So they dug a new hole. Oh yeah, and when I was writing this and misspelled original, it tried to autocorrect it to virginal, and then it would have said the virginal hole.
Jeez.
Drilling is very, it's got some undertones that sound very sexual. Okay, so there's no unfortunate there's no graph of this, but they went down beside the original hole straight down, then they went straight sideways. They went past the original hole, then they went straight sideways to try and like pierce the side of the original shaft or possibly get below the first shaft.
Okay. You know. I mean, it's smart.
Yeah, they're trying a different over, under, through. What are we gonna do? And then about 1 meter or 3 feet from the first shaft, water starts bursting through and then gushing into their tunnel, and they had to run for their lives. Aww. The water was coming. So that sucks. And that's when Simeon Lyons, almost broke and quite beaten, gave up. He ceases his searching. And I think it's somewhere around this time that it starts to become known as the money pit, that area that they're digging in.
Okay.
You know, which also has a kind of a double meaning. Searching for money, but people be sinking money into it.
Yeah.
Sometime after that, Daniel McGinnis died of natural causes, I believe. It did not seem to be linked to searching. And this is actually important because the actual curse, quote unquote, of Oak Island is not only about leeching your money and your time if you fall prey to it, but it's a more specific curse lore that arose at least over 100 years ago. I think maybe after they started searching. Again, hard to find information, but it's just that the legend goes that 7 men must die before the secret of the curse will actually be revealed.
Okay, that I knew about. I couldn't remember how many of them had to die, though. But aren't they close? There's like one more that has to die or something.
I believe there's 6, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, by the end of these notes, we'll get to like 5, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what my dad will watch the preview for it. And then it'll be like, they found something else. Well, they're never going to actually find it because 7 people haven't died. I'm like, okay, Dad.
I kind of think about it too, because, well, like, people that have been associated with the search have died of other causes during the last 10 years and stuff that the show has been on. But like, I don't know, right? I think it's they have to be directly related to it, you know?
Yeah.
So after that, after the first searchers, we have the Truro Company enter them. They wanted to have a go. They drilled down to 30 meters, or just about where the crowbar had hit something that was hard. And they were actually using a horse-driven pod auger. So it's like literally horse-powered or whatever. I don't know.
It's great. I love it.
They're powering the mechanics. I just love that. Yeah, it's so old-fashioned. And, so this auger is like this big drill bit looking thing that picks up samples of anything it hits along the way. So it gets 30 meters or about 98 feet down, and then it hit nothing at all but empty space, followed by 10 centimeters of oak, then 59 centimeters of metal pieces, 8 centimeters of oak, 22 centimeters of loose metal again, 10 more centimeters of oak and spruce, and then into deep clay.
So they broke through whatever it was and destroyed it.
Yeah, right? It's like, okay. That's... Yeah, you really know what you've been through, but you can't, like, pick it up. So frustrating.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
But I'm surprised they can get down to that at... this is in the 1800s still.
Yeah, that's really impressive. I'm impressed that the other guys were able to like tunnel down so deep.
Right? Just like, with their own shovels, or I don't know exactly how they reinforced the original shaft. So they thought this might be a possible vault with 2 chests, like one on top of the other, and why they have like oak, then loose metal, and then oak. And then the auger did pick up something along its way. It had 3 links of a gold chain attached to the end of it when it came back up.
Yeah. Jewelry, treasure chest.
The smell and the gold.
Yeah.
So funny, urban legends or Canadian legends and stuff. And then Pat will be like, you should watch this guy or whatever. And then there's this YouTuber talking about creepy stuff up north in Northwest Territories, like Headless Valley and stuff. And I was like, I think we got near that with cryptids and stuff, but
yeah,
I don't know.
I think you talked about it. Yeah, sounded
familiar. I think I might have. But anyway, there's definitely crazy stuff out there. Okay. What am I going on about? So then they dug a 2nd shaft, was dug down to 34 meters or about 111 feet in 1850, and it flooded also, wah wah. But they learned but they learned something from this flood, that it was salt water, as evidenced by a guy spluttering as he came up, "Salt water." He must have tasted it.
Ew.
Yeah. And then they noticed that it kind of seemed to rise and fall with the tide after it had flooded, I guess. And apparently this triggered a memory within Anthony Vaughn. Quote, years before, he had seen water gushing down the beach at Smith's Cove, 158 meters from the money pit at low tide. So they went and dug up the beach at Smith's Cove, hoping to find a hidden inlet of water. Instead, they found a layer of coconut fibers and eelgrass over top of a stone floor that stretched 47 meters, 145 feet wide, the full distance between high and low tide marks. So it like stretched the expanse from, yeah, where the high and low tide would reach. And under the stone floor, they found a set of French box drains. There is a picture of those too.
French box drain.
Yeah, I didn't know what the hell a box drain was. I would say it kind of resembles like a hand with five fingers branching off of a main wrist or trunk kind of, yeah, drain.
Huh.
Yeah, it's... They never, yeah, they have just recreations of them because they're, you can't, like, there's still water covering them in real life, I think. But it said then, in effect, the beach acted as a gigantic sponge to soak up tide water and filter it into a conduit. This conduit dropped 21 meters straight down, later exploration proved, then sloped back to a point deep in the money pit, all of it filled with loose rock to prevent erosion. This brilliant baffle was no natural obstacle. It was the work of a genius. As diggers neared the cache at 30 meters, they had unwittingly lessened the pressure of earth that plugged the mouth of the conduit. That's just from the Reader's Digest article I read. So it just feeds right into the tunnel if anyone tries to dig.
Yeah.
Area. So yeah, they obviously set it up to work with the tides and everything. And so the Truro crew that was working there at the time decided to build a cofferdam to hold back the sea. So just like this big, like, I don't know what they built it out of, but they can be metal or like, I don't know, rubber, I guess, and they just, it just like a half moon kind of shape dam to like hold back some of the water.
Did it block those drains?
They were trying to, yeah, they were trying to get to, yeah, exactly, block the water from going in the drains, but the cofferdam broke, so they couldn't figure this part out or get past it. So then they decided to dig 36 meters or 118 feet down and tried to go kind of like under it again, under the original shaft. But while they didn't get hit with a bunch of seawater this time, they had to again leave the site for a time to go to dinner, in fact. They paused their work.
No. Stop abandoning your work.
Jesus. It's like they can't leave it for 2 seconds. It's like a toddler. It'll be running away. And once they returned, they found the bottom of the pit collapsed into their new tunnel and then dropped even further into a, quote, into a mysteriously empty space.
Oh my God.
Jesus. It's painful.
I mean, at least nobody was down there, I guess, because they were all to dinner.
Yes. They ultimately had spent $40,000 but garnered the tiny island a lot of attention in the process. Yay? No.
That was probably so much money now if it's $40,000 in like the 1800s.
That's right. Yeah, I don't think this was adjusted for inflation. More people came to try their hand at whatever this is and left with nothing to show for it, but at least they did escape with their escape.
Escape? They escaped.
Escape. They escaped with their lives intact. Dun, dun, dun.
We both said dun dun dun.
It's very appropriate. Quote, one outfit gave up after a steam pump exploded, killing a man. End quote.
There's death That's, one?
Yeah.
Mark? Okay.
Yeah, because it's like they're working
yeah.
at the site and it happens.
Too bad somebody didn't drown in that dinner then, I guess.
Oh, yeah, everyone's so far been pretty lucky. In 1893, a man named Frederick Blair joined the list of men who became overtaken by obsession with Oak Island. I'd never heard of this guy, actually. It goes back a long time, so, right.
Yeah.
He was a Nova Scotia businessman. He spent 60 years of his life trying to solve it. His crew were among the first to use core drilling, a type of fast rotation drilling, sometimes known as diamond drilling. And they got down to 47 meters or about 154 feet, the deepest at the time. Their cut is the deepest. Well, at the bottom, does it still say I'm on page 106 when that's not true? Anyway. It's
bumming me out. You probably just haven't clicked on anything since page 6.
Yeah. Boop, boop. Oh, there we go. You're right. Okay, so they got down to 47 meters, 154 feet, and they hit cement. About 18 centimeters of it, then 13 centimeters of oak, then 81 centimeters of metal pieces, then more oak and cement. Finally ended at 51 meters or 167 feet. That's as far as they got. Pretty far.
Yeah.
Yeah, they... I don't think they've honestly got much further now. So Blair believed this was a treasure chest encased in primitive concrete. And it seemed larger and deeper than the first things they had found, if they were treasure chests in the first vault, we don't know. But this one, I mean, the first one brought up some gold, and then this drill bit brought up flecks of gold and a tiny scrap of parchment.
Ooh.
Tiny.
Paper.
The clues. It showed the letters V and I written with a quill pen and India ink. It was analyzed in Boston, I guess.
It is. I'm shocked that they can determine that kind of stuff.
I know.
I'm like, but they'll find out in like the FBI even today, just like one of the Forensic Files episodes I watched, they lined up the I guess it's almost like a pattern of like the dye patterns of two garbage bags to confirm that they were part of the same roll and that the perforation grooves of one being ripped off from the like perforated thing from the other was that they were like matched, and they even figured out the lot and like what day they had been manufactured. I'm like, how? What the fuck? Like,
oh my god,
it was too much.
That is insane. That yeah, sounds like they're like, oh yeah, details. Like
a piece of dirt can like get lodged in the thing, and that'll affect. It'll make like a mark on the color of like all the garbage bags in that exact same spot for like as many garbage bags as it takes for it to kind of like go away. And they're like, yeah, and then that dot in that exact same spot with all the other grooves and stuff will never occur again. It's Jesus, people. Like,
meanwhile, to us, it just looks like a black garbage bag.
Yeah. It's insane. Like, so, I mean, if you're ever going to murder somebody, don't keep the garbage bags if you use them. Get rid of the entire box after.
Anything. Ugh, gosh, it's so crazy. Forensics, man. So with this gold flex and tiny scrap of parchment, the searcher man, Blair, was more convinced than ever. He said, quote, "That's more convincing than a few doubloons would be," Blair claimed. "Either a treasure of immense value or historical documents are at the bottom of that pit," end quote. But they also ran out of money after investing over $100,000. And the syndicate that he was a part of folded. So Blair got the rights to search on the island. Apparently they were called treasure trove rights. Then he offered to lease them in return for a share of any profit found. So once he opened up that, the first taker was a man named Harry Bowdoin. Bowdoin? I'm not too sure. Harry was an engineer from New York, and several of the financiers. I wrote the word, I don't know how to say it. Several of the financiers, that's probably what I meant, for this project were prominent backers, including one young lawyer named Franklin D. Roosevelt. There's a picture of him on the drive, and you know what he grows up to be one day. President of the United States.
Is he the short guy with the mustache in the front?
He has a big old cigar in his mouth, and he looks all cocky, kind of.
That guy's too old. So he's the
where am I
third going? From the right, I guess.
Oh my god, I have to go back to the drive.
He's the only one wearing shorts, and he's wearing very tall socks. Just the sliver of calf.
It's old. Wait, shorts? No, they're wearing, wait, it's like black and white?
Yeah.
A sliver of calves?
Yeah, a sliver of his calf. He's got white shoes on.
Is that him? White shoes? Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's almost like there's some bands around the knees of those pants or something. Yeah, they're
weird. Okay, I thought he was wearing like shorts, like knee-length shorts, and then it had like just a little patch of his legs and then really tall like socks.
Oh, well, you could be right. There's just a strip of something fashion. Flesh-colored at the knee, so it's hard to tell.
And then he's wearing white, dirty shoes.
New treasure hunts. But he's standing so jaunty. Yeah, look at me. I got a big old pipe in my mouth.
Yeah, at first I thought it was the guy beside him, but that guy's way too old.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure it's the guy with the pipe.
That's what I mean.
Oh man, I had to look up a picture of, well, some of the crazy doctors that experimented on the prisoners in the Patreon. And Joseph Mengele is not a pretty man. Not that it matters.
Oh my god.
So there's a picture where he kind of looks like Hitler too, yeah.
Side note, I did look up Joseph Mengele after to try and figure out if he was the one that did the conjoined twins stuff. And it was. Okay. So he did try and like conjoin twins. But I read an interview that must have been from like the same twin you had a thing about, because she was talking, but she said that all of the girls in like the camps and stuff, because they were kind of like referred to as like Mengele's girls, and they were treated better and everything, all the ones he was experimenting on. And apparently they were all in love with him. Like, her and her sister survived the like torture, all these experiments, and while they're being interviewed, all they kept talking about was this horrible stuff happening and how attractive they thought Mengele was and how everybody fawned over him and he was like a rock star. It was so creepy. I was like, ooh.
Poor girls. That must be Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, it's like 100 years later and you girls are like fawning over him and you like firsthand experienced all this stuff. Oh, it was so creepy.
That's so like so traumatic. They must be so traumatized and just like,
yeah, it was weird. They just kept paragraph after paragraph going on and on about how amazing he was, and he was treated like a rock star, and he walked into a room and like all looked spiffy, and everybody be like, he wants to talk to you, he wants to talk to you.
Oh, even he after he's poking them and leaving them, and
it was creepy.
Measuring all them and killing some, they must have known some of them were dying and they were gonna die.
It was a creepy article. I didn't like it.
Yeah, and we can't really fault them because, like, yeah, like I said, they could feel like Stockholm syndrome-y, and then maybe they was like kind of the ultimate grooming where you're just like with that person and you don't even have any other authority figures or parental units.
Probably. Aww. Yeah, it was just creepy. That's
so sad. Yeah, it's so creepy too.
Anyway,
oh no, you're good. I just lost my notes. There we go.
Lost your notes in all the tabs.
I know, I'm very OCD with the tabs. This is a little much for me right now. Okay. Yes. So yes, what we had now a president, a future president that participated in one of the searches. And then they attempted another drilling in 1909. Then, presumably frustrated, Bowdoin. How did I say his name?
Bowdoin.
He was that engineer from New York. And he wrote a magazine article denying there was ever a treasure to be found on the island anyway. So I think he was a little disenchanted after his searches failed.
Yeah, why would you? You don't know, buddy.
He's like, there's nothing there.
I didn't find it. I looked and there is nothing there. People just put cement and wood and coconut for nothing. There's nothing there. And booby traps. Right.
Just water booby traps. Underground houses, like
carved out of hoodoos that grew upside down.
No, I was trying to connect it.
Hoodoos that grew underground down towards the core of the earth instead of up.
It's so easy to maintain an underground house. There were houses, in the Little House in the Prairie series. They live in a place called a dugout, which was kind of like, kind of just carved out of the dirt in the side of a hill or something sometimes. Yeah. But like, yeah, they're not easy to maintain and you gotta sweep them out. And
you need to reinforce everything above you and to the side of you.
Yes. One time a cow was just walking on top of their house and it's like, foot came through their roof. Okay. So back to our show. Syndicates from Wisconsin, Rochester, New York, and Newark, New Jersey all tried and failed and came and saw and did not conquer. And by 1931, William Chappell of Sydney, Nova Scotia, quote, sank $30,000 into the money pit, and then he quit. Lots of money going into it. By 1936, Gilbert Hedden spent $100,000, but he was a millionaire from Jersey, so meh, I'm sure that was nothing.
Yeah, it's a Tuesday.
Eh, it was Mr. Burns from The Simpsons in the Billionaires Club, no. Then William Chappell's son, Mel, got the rights to the island. He leased a portion to another man taken in by the mystery of the island, one Robert Restall of Hamilton, Ontario. Robert Restall quit his job making $150 a week as a steel worker, moved himself and his family, his wife Mildred, his two sons Bobby and Ricky, 24 and 14 years old respectively, all to Oak Island to search.
I bet they loved that.
Right? Okay, dear. You were making money.
Yeah, now we're going to spend money in the hopes that we may eventually make a whole lot of money.
I want to be an adventurer.
I'm Indiana Jones.
National treasure.
I'm Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, unfortunately, his most significant find was probably an olive-colored stone with the date 1704 inscribed on it that he found in one of the boreholes.
Wow. I mean, I know. At least he didn't find nothing, but he found a stone.
He did.
It ain't no three-piece gold chain.
No, that's
true. Four-piece of parchment.
But yeah, we're sure somebody certainly went to great lengths to hide something, and he was convinced of it too. He kept searching. In 1965, Robert Restall's search came to an abrupt and rather tragic end when he was checking on one of his 8-foot holes and fell in after being overcome by the fumes.
Oh,
so that was terrible. Unfortunate. Mm-hmm. That's why he's always talked about it. Like, he lives on in the history of Oak Island. And unfortunately, his son Bobby then ran to help, followed by two other men, Cyril Hiltz and Carl Grazer. And they all fell into the water at the bottom of the hole and also drowned.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So that one was, like, the biggest one, because, like, 4 people basically died all in one fell swoop. And it was most likely carbon monoxide poisoning, they think, from the gas water pumps, it said. So that brings the death total up to 5. And yeah, that one was sad because it's like half that family. Robert and his son Bobby. Yeah. What was that? And yep, that was a pretty significant year for Oak Island, just because it was also the year a Reader's Digest article came out about the mystery of Oak Island, which would lead to another man becoming obsessed and, well, moving there is not too much of a spoiler, but don't worry, he lived a long life. And as well as it fascinated 2 young brothers who read the very same article in 1965, who would later be handed the torch to carry on the search for the treasure. And they're finding pretty majorly interesting things today with the technology we have and the team that they've built. But that's where we'll leave it for this week.
The mystery continues. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
Little cliffhanger, unless you like watch the show.
Yeah, I do know some of the stuff that they've found since.
Yeah, it's not nothing, and it's been really interesting the last 2 years. I find, like, nothing, maybe no major treasure yet, so a lot of people still kind of don't count it, you know. I wouldn't count it a failure, though. It's been like really interesting historically, so I've been watching it like, what the heck,
what's yeah next? I think the out of the most of the episodes I've ever caught, for some reason they happen to be like their season end, like recap one where they like sit down and do big interview with everybody. It seems like those are the only episodes I ever see.
Yeah, because they have like an extra one where it's like digging deeper, where then they kind of
that's
recap
the one.
And yeah oh totally. Oh, it's
got so it's like the highlights.
Yeah, which is good, because sometimes like it is kind of filmed like anything reality TV-ish, where they like kind of edit things to make it look more exciting next week than it necessarily is.
It always seems like next week is the week.
Yeah, somebody say like, well, that means we found the money pit, but then you're like, if this, then that means that we found the money pit, you know. It's always like a little less exciting when it comes to the one, but that's just TV editing for you. Even we gotta make our stuff a little dramatic.
Yeah, like us leaving it on a cliffhanger.
Yay. Yeah, I really find this one interesting. So I hope everyone else does too, but we'll see, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's cool. I definitely, in our lifetime, I hope they like figure it out. Because I want to know.
I think it's one of those great mysteries. Yeah, I think it's really up there, because it's obvious we I don't think anyone could really look at any of it and deny that there's something that somebody wanted to hide really badly.
Yeah, to go through all these lengths. Yeah, there has to be something smart. Pretty good. Yeah, they're very smart.
Yeah. Which is going to be interesting next week with all the different theories, and I haven't never really delved into it on my own, so oh my god, we'll see
how long this
takes me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yay, I'll be excited. Hopefully everybody else is, or we don't care whether you are or not. We're excited.
We're defensive. No. Yeah, I'm excited. I think it's going to be fun. And then we will be back to our regularly scheduled programming after that with our poison crimes. Yeah. Yeah, we're doing poison crimes.
We're anything to do with poison. Gas, powder,
liquid, poison gas. Whatever. I usually possess that. No. Yeah, I think that one would be an interesting one. Sometimes it's fun to like do a weird crime one, like sports crimes or something that you just wouldn't look up necessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
There's quite a few famous poison crimes, so we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
See what we end up with.
Yeah, I don't know if we've done any poison ones yet. I'm trying to think, but
I think the only one is one that like came up again, and that was the in I think from Russia with Love, my like lady did like a poisoning gang with like a whole bunch of other women, dissatisfied housewives,
right?
Poison edition.
Yes. Just mass poisoning all over the village. Yeah. That's a pretty crazy one. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I think that's probably the only poison one we've covered.
Yeah. Weird.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Better get on our poison game.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening. And check back for part two.
Yes. Hope you enjoy. And until next time, keep it cliffhanger.
Keep it
stupid.
I like it.
I could start doing dad jokes. I heard someone start the podcast with a dad joke the other day. I was trying to ask everybody, I'm not sure what this IDK knows, but everyone I asked, nobody seems to know. I was like, oh my god. Like that.
My dad didn't, or not my dad, my brother and some of the guys from his work. They like have all these Facebook pages that they're, or Facebook groups, I guess, that they're part of that is like a dad joke a day kind of stuff. So yeah, every day they basically try and one up each other on the best dad joke of the day.
Oh my God. That's cute.
My brother
next group we have a nap challenges.
Oh yeah.
That's my brother guys napped. Do when they get older.
My brother napped like an old man before he was an old man.
He was pre-napping. He was practice napping.
Yeah, he took like a thing home to basically find out like if he needed like a sleep apnea machine or if he was like narcoleptic or something. I don't know. They were trying to figure out what was going on. And so he had to keep like this thing attached to him, and then it was basically just like a breathing tube like in his nose or whatever, and it had to be inside his nose for like at least a certain amount of hours while he slept like continuously. Even just one night, he literally just needed it to be done one night, and he kept renting it out, and I think he had it for almost a week, and not a single night did he not like rip the thing out of his nose. They even taped it everywhere on his face, and he'd get like 10 minutes to the like deadline that they needed and it would get ripped out. So he was so close every time. And then it got to a certain point, they were like, we're not going to keep renting it to you, like you basically have to come in and sleep here. And he's like, well, I don't want to do that. And they're like, okay, well, I guess you're like figuring it out. Sleep
studies. That's
yeah,
they're kind of horrifying in a way. They're right? All like taped up and you're trying to sleep yeah. and somebody down the hall is like screaming with their sleep disorder. I don't know. I was reading yeah. a book where the lady had to go for one. I was like, that sounds kind of scary.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Hopefully y'all can sleep tonight. There wasn't too many terrifying things in our episode.
No, unless you're afraid of rock formations or buried treasure, I think you're okay.
Which is probably a nice change from last week where a few yes. people died.
A lot of people. Dark. We yeah. brought the double the sad.
Double the sad. Then we yeah. did a Patreon where I covered a lot of gruesome things. If you like Japanese true crime episode, I went into yes. more of over Unit 731 and prisoner experiments. So that was also pretty dark. So you're welcome.
And I brought something else that's buried. I brought something that's buried in the Patreon. Then you brought something that's buried.
Oh. Yeah. I love that. Synchronicity.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that until you were like, yeah, that episode's like this, and I was like, well, what's mine like? And I was like this.
You know, we should, yeah, you like berry things. I think we've discovered yeah. it. But I do too.
Yeah.
Oh, all right,
it's cool.
Catch you next week.
Yes, bye. Thanks for listening. This has been Castles and Cryptids. You can listen to our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Anchor, Breaker, Pocket Casts, and our YouTube channel. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Reddit. On our website, you can listen to all of our episodes as well as view pictures for each of our segments. Check out our Patreon page to view all of our tiers and become a Patreon supporter today to unlock monthly bonus episodes and behind-the-scenes content. We are working on an Ask Us Anything. You can submit questions by social media or by email at castlesandcryptids@gmail.com. Do you have a spooky ghost story, a creepy cryptid sighting, or a thrilling true crime tale you would like to share and have us include in a future episode? Send us your listener story by social media or by email. Please include the name that you would like mentioned. Our music is by Kobe Affair. Our logo and artwork is by Antonio Garcia. Thanks for listening!